essence of all revealed scriptures. And one should understand this as it is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, one will become intelligent and perfect in transcendental knowledge. In other words, by understanding this philosophy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engaging in his transcendental service, everyone can become freed from all contaminations of the modes of material nature. Devotional service is a process of spiritual understanding. Wherever devotional service exists, the material contamination cannot coexist. Devotional service to the Lord and the Lord himself are one and the same because they are spiritual. Devotional service takes place within the internal energy of the Supreme Lord. The Lord is said to be the sun, and ignorance is called darkness. Where the sun is present, there is no question of darkness. Therefore, whenever devotional service is present under the proper guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, there is no question of ignorance. Everyone must take to this consciousness of Krishna and engage in devotional service to become intelligent and purified. Unless one comes to this position of understanding Krishna and engages in devotional service, however intelligent he may be in the estimation of some common man, he is not perfectly intelligent. So we'll stop there. So you hear of this Black Friday with all kinds of offers. Well, here's a much better offer, that if you just engage in devotional service, you'll be on the path of perfection. So we should listen very carefully to this text. We find that this is in the later chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. I just saved the best for last. Krishna is saying here that this is the most confidential part of all the Vedic scriptures. So it's very important that we understand that what he's disclosing is top secret. But he gives it to everybody because it is such a wonderful thing that just by doing devotional service, offering everything to the Supreme Lord in whatever way you can have so much spiritual understanding. There's so much power and purity in devotional service that he gives a hint to some of this. One of the things he says is that devotional service can erase all the contamination that we've gotten here, accumulated in the material world in so many lifetimes of engaging in fruitive activities, sinful activities, good activities, being bound by so many things here in the material world. But simply with the stroke of some simple devotional service, all those reactions are gone. And it can also protect you from further reactions, good or bad, which bind us here to this material world, which lock us up here and we can't get out. It's also described that this is part of the internal energy. Most internal things are very, very concentrated. And here it's described that this Vedic literature and devotional services is so concentrated, it's very brilliant. It's brilliant like the sun. And it dissipates all the darkness. So being in this material world, we're all pretty much in darkness. It's actually described, you can hear from our scientists here, that this whole material world, all the universes and everything, is just one little teeny-weeny dark corner of the whole creation. And the spiritual world is three-fourths in light. So this devotional service, just rendering our material body and engaging in service here, we can become enlightened, literally. We can actually understand who we are and what our relationship is with the Supreme Lord. This is also confirmed in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I read one of my little, we have these little desk things with verses in them you can read every day, a daily reader, and I came across one just the other day, and it echoes this. And this is from a different book. It's called the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is like a postgraduate study. And it has a really beautiful saying in it. It says, if one simply chants Hare Krishna, the Hare Krishna mantra, and does not commit sinful activities and offenses, one's life is purified, and thus one comes to the fifth stage of perfection, or engagement in the loving service of the Lord. So this is very powerful. Just this one service of chanting Hare Krishna, of taking our tongue and repeating the holy names of God, glorifying God, we can actually be presented to the Lord and render him service. And actually, like it says here, eventually we can know perfection, which is the Supreme Lord himself, because this internal potency is non-different than the Supreme Lord. He puts all his energy in this service to him. So we should understand that we can experience some realizations just by putting our senses in the fire of devotion. All this sinful activities goes away. So we should take it up very nicely. Now, this word service gets some people a little uncomfortable. They can't seem to admit that we are servants. But if we look at most of our life, and like in one day, how much service we do, in this lifetime, really all we're doing is rendering service. Especially it begins with when we're put into this material body. Always serving this body. I mean, when you're even very teeny tiny, you're having to eat, you're having to do so many things. When you wake up in the morning, or even before you wake up in the morning, you wake up in the middle of night, what do you have to do? You have to go service your body. You don't want to, right? No one wants to wake up. You have to walk across, and we're tired. And so this is a service. The material body also has a subtle body, which is the mind. How much do we serve our mind? The mind is telling us to do this, to do that, to like this, to reject that. Constantly, we're listening to our mind and rendering service. And it gets very tiresome. And sometimes impossible to control this mind, always keeping us very, very busy. And also the body, when it gets old, we think, oh, less service to do, you know. At least the mind's not going to be wanting all these things because we can't do so much. But then so many body parts we're having to put back on and put together and everything, going to this doctor, that doctor, right? It gets worse and worse as you get older. Still are rendering service to that material body. The desires, the health, so many things. We're constant servants of this body. And then if you look at the superiors, I mean, how many superiors have we had in this lifetime? So many. Your parents, the bosses, the temple president, so many people are our superiors. And even just having a friend is a lot of work. It's a lot of service. You know, if you forget to put that little virtual cake on Facebook, you know, you better watch out. You know, there's so many services we have to do to keep these relationships together. And then we have dependents also, not just our superiors, but those dependents. How many people have children? How much service is that? And it doesn't stop even when they're 30 and 40, right? It keeps going. And then you've got the grandkids, you're serving the grandkids. And anyone have a pet? No one has a pet. Well, we just got a dog here on the property to chase away deer. A lot of service. A lot of service, you know. It's amazing. Anyway, household, all the, you know, other living entities in your house, you have to serve. And then that mentality of, oh, I'm not really a servant. I can have so many things at my disposal. And so you start gathering things, and you have possessions. Everyone has a car, right? I know that's one of my biggest bills. You know, serve the car. Right now, the little blinker's going on. Service, maintenance, got to go there, pay your $60, and then they tell you, no, actually, you need this too and that too. And right? So that's a constant service. So it's bogus. You're not simply free and independent. We are servants at every step. And, of course, there are the higher authorities of the government. And some governments are very insistent on your service. It gets kind of scary. So this is reality. It's a reality tours, and it keeps us busy 24/7. And so at some point, we need to admit that we are a servant in many, many ways. So how you look at that service, that's another thing. Many people in the material world look at the service as, oh, this life is a drag. I'm forced to do so many things, you know. But in the future, I'm going to enjoy, so I'll just do it, you know, and then I'll get some benefit at the end. And then there's another attitude of, well, that's life. I have to do service, right? It's just my duty. So I just do it. And I hope that I'll get some relief from some of the misery of it and get some pleasure. And so this is a dutiful, nice attitude which gets you through life. to death, and then to life again, and then death again. And then there's the person who really gets into it. Says, I'll serve. Okay, I'm going to serve. I'm going to get 1, 2, 3 jobs, and I'm going to get so many possessions that I have to serve. And then it just goes on and on. So this is can be a dangerous situation if you're always thinking that I have to have more and more and more and never satisfied. Then one gets very depressed, stressed out, and we see where that might lead to. And then there's some people that actually get tired of serving themselves, and they decide that actually, better I serve other people. And I feel better about that. I'm more satisfied serving other people. And this is very nice service. This is definitely in the mode of goodness. And some people want recognition for it, others don't. So it really depends on your attitude towards the service. But the materialists and the spiritualists, those who are seeking some liberation from this position of being here in the material world and to get some more realizations like it's describing here of perfection, they both are serving, but the materialist has one problem because they don't see who their master is. They are so spun around that they are just serving and serving in different ways, maybe with different attitudes, but they don't know who they're serving. There is a master. And she's employed by the Supreme Lord to keep us here in this material world. She does a good job. Anyone agree? 99.9% of the population are here in the material world serving, and they don't even know who they're serving. But they think, oh, well, you know, this must be all in all, because as soon as you're born, Maya, which is the servant of the Lord who's responsible for this, spins you around like a top. And you keep spinning, and you think, oh, this is so nice. This, you know, I'm the Lord of all I survey here. This is a great place. And she keeps us in this illusion, and she gives some promises to make it very nice place. She spruces it up, and she says that, don't worry, you'll enjoy, you know, just give me this, work here, do that. And they're all false promises. Ultimately, she says, okay, now bend over, and she kicks you right onto your face. So a bad master. Unfortunately, the materialist cannot see her. But we, as devotees, we have an advantage. In human form of life, we actually have the responsibility to start questioning, why am I forced to do all these things I don't really want to do, that I shouldn't be doing, or that I have to do? You know, who really is my master? Is this what I want in a master? And so the intelligent person, as is described here, will listen and hear that beyond this material world, and the creator of all the worlds is the Supreme Lord, Krishna, or God. And therefore, it's very important that we know more about our master and what he offers. He actually offers us a better plan. In his promises, they're all, you know, tried and true. He's very responsible for what he says. And he says that if you just simply render some service to me in this lifetime, then he will accept you back. So this is the best offer. The Supreme Lord, also, he's been a very kind master. We actually decided to leave him at some point, unfortunately, and try to, you know, enjoy without him on our own path. But he's been waiting around for us to return to him the whole time. He didn't leave. He's still there, hoping, oh, maybe this lifetime, maybe he'll come knocking on my door and saying, please accept me back. And that's what the devotee does when he accepts his Hare Krishna mantra. This mantra is actually saying, oh Lord, oh Supreme Lord, energy of the Lord, please accept me. Please accept my service again. And then he becomes very pleased, and he actually gives you a reward right away. You feel some relief from all that stress and binding to the material world. He's been waiting a long time for us just to look at him, to reunite with him. And so it's very important that we connect again, connect that soul again, and then we can have some real satisfaction. Because in the material world, there is definitely a lack of that. One great thing is that he doesn't require any particular service. He's very, very kind. He says any service will do, but one thing's very important, that it must be filled with some love and devotion. And that's the only quality, not the quantity or the thing in particular. He actually just wants the love and devotion. There's some stories to illustrate this, true stories. I think last week you saw a play, right? And he played Vidura. Anybody remember who Vidura was? Great saint, right? Sage. Great saint and sage. But he was more or less, I'm going to call him the white sheep of the family because all the others were black. They were all really bad, nasty brothers. But he was actually the good sheep. And he had a very simple life. He was not, you know, looking for big power and everything. He was actually in a situation where he had a very simple situation in the palace. And but he had so much love and devotion to Krishna, unlike his other brothers. And he had heard that Krishna was around the palace, and Krishna was actually so happy to go see Vidura because Vidura had so much love and affection. So he went there unexpectedly. He knocked on the door, and Vidura came, and his wife came, and she was like shocked. Mesmerized, here's the Supreme Lord, the most wonderful person, come at my house. And you can imagine, what if Krishna came to your house right now? You'd run around like crazy trying to find something to give him, look in the kitchen, find some boga, you'd mix something, water, anything. And so she ran around and she found a banana. And she was like just looking at Krishna and peeling the banana and handed him the banana peel and threw the banana over here and Krishna took the banana peel, but he accepted that because it was offered with such love and devotion, right? There's another story, actually, about Vidura. Again, in the palace, Duryodhan, one of the black sheep, one of the very evil brothers, he wanted to impress Krishna for some reason. And so he said, oh, you must come to my house for nice foodstuffs. Come for lunch. And he hired all the greatest cooks and so many preparations, everything. Nice setting and beautiful room, palace, and great gold dishes and everything. And Krishna said, no thanks. I just want to go to Vidura's house and have some simple sabji, rice, that's all. Because he is my devotee. And Duryodhana was furious, of course. But Vidura was very pleased. Actually, there's a song in the scriptures. I'll read you the translation to one of the, because it tells a little bit about this story. It's the lyrics at the end are Radha Sham Sham Sham. This is Sham here, and Radha Sham. So the verse that has to do with this, it says, you did not, this is talking about Krishna, you did not accept the sumptuous feast of the wicked Duryodhan, but to the coarse food offered by your devotee, Vidura. Therefore, you are worshipped by love and not by mere rituals. Radhe Sham, Sham, Sham. So this is proof that Krishna is looking for the quality of that devotion, of actually putting in that offering attitude which the devotee has. There's another story also of Lord Ramachandra, who's also the Supreme Lord Krishna in a different era, and he had a very nice devotee, and she was a widow, and she lived in the forest, and she asked her guru what she should do for purification, and his guru said, you should just prepare every day that the Supreme Lord is going to come visit you. Lord Ramachandra is going to come visit your little dwelling here someday. So she was busy every single day of the rest of her life, preparing things, getting the fruit, making the petals on the pathway to receive her Lord. But he didn't come, and he didn't come. But every day she would still do that with love and devotion, preparing for the Lord to come. And then the Lord knows, he knows everyone's heart, and he knows that devotion and that love that's building up in your heart. And so he actually came to this little hermitage, and of course she was completely surprised that he's actually come. And she spread the flowers, and she came and she sat him down. And then she found a basket of fruit. They're called pilu fruits. And unless they're very ripe, they're kind of sour. So she was going to offer them to him, but she wanted to make sure they were the best ones. So she would take a little bite of them first and then give it to him to eat. Now, none of us would think of doing anything like that, to bite something and then give it to God. But because of that devotion, he was very, very happy to accept it. So this is another position that the Lord takes it. No matter what you offer with love and devotion, it says in Bhagavad Gita that he will accept. So it's very important to add that secret ingredient that in your recipes. As neophytes, we're not on this level of taking a bite and giving it to Krishna. In the kitchens here, we're very, very strict about how we offer our food. We don't taste it or enjoy it while we're cooking. Some people can't understand how do you make such nice things and you don't taste them first. I remember the first time I went home after I was a devotee. I was trying to cook something in my mother's kitchen, and she took the spoon and went, don't taste it. She was like frightened. What do you mean? You know? And so, we're very strict. So we're not on this level. So here's describing in this verse that we're very difficult, uncomfortable for us to approach the Supreme Lord because we are such neophyte. But with the help of the spiritual master, he can, clean us up and shape us up and then make us presentable to the Supreme Lord. I got a Krishna.com letter the other day, and there's one lady, she lives in Indiana in the middle of, I don't know where, I never heard of the city. She was begging for association. She never had association, but she gotten some books, very much dedicated to Prabhupada's books and to become a devotee. And she was saying, I don't feel qualified even to chant or do anything, And I actually wrote back and said, this is very nice qualification just because you're not feeling qualified. And so we should be on that level of awe and reverence to our Supreme Lord and realize that we do need our spiritual master, who is expert in service, who's purified, to engage us in this purifying process so that we can add that ingredient of love and devotion. So this service is non-different. It's equal to surrender. As we serve, we're surrendering our false ego and so many nasty habits and things like that. There's a song I really like to sing. It's called Atmani Vedana, which means full surrender. And this is a little description of how real this selfless surrender can look like. I have become extremely happy by surrendering myself at your lotus feet. All my miseries and anxieties have been vanquished. And everywhere I look, I see happiness. Your lotus feet are free from lamentation and fear, and they are the source of all nectar. Now, having taken shelter of those lotus feet, I gave up the fear of material existence, just like it's describing in this verse. I will render service to you in this world, but I will not accept any reward in return. I will simply engage in activities which please you while remaining attached to your lotus feet. All miseries faced in the course of your service are actually the source of great happiness. Feelings of happiness and distress in your service are a great wealth. Both destroy the miseries of ignorance. Having received the pleasure of your transcendental service, I have forgotten all of my past. I'm certainly your servant, and you are certainly my master. Therefore, what is the use of desiring any other wealth? So this is what we're being offered here, the greatest wealth of satisfaction and happiness by just rendering some simple service. And the more we actually can render in pure devotion and without all these desires for this and this, the more the reception becomes clear and that reciprocation can really happen. You can actually experience, just like when you really offer your food very nicely in a nice, clean atmosphere, it always tastes better. I remember one time we saw pictures of the old temple over here. Oh, it was sad. And I had put about 3 floors on because they kept falling through, and it kept getting shorter and shorter. It was only a 7-foot ceiling anyway. And finally, we get just a real, like, super cleanup, and everyone commented, boy, that was the best Sunday feast, you know, because we had cleaned and we had gotten in the proper consciousness to make it better. So that reciprocation is very nice. There's another example that just happened the other day, and it's about Sankirtan. One devotee in this community, Radhikesh, I had invited a bunch of people to go on the day the Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Santa Fe to chant and give out books. So he was thinking all morning, yes, I'm going to distribute books. I'm going to distribute books. I know I can do it. I want to do some Gitas. So we get to the campus, and he goes, oh, you only brought that many Gitas? I'm going to distribute so more. I said, it's about 10 Gitas here, you know. And we're only there for like an hour. He says, I'm got the books right away, and he went out there, and he stood kind of behind a bush, you know, and I noticed there was a boy on a bench behind there. It was during, in between classes, not many people going by, and I thought, oh gosh, I hope he doesn't get disappointed, you know, and so all of a sudden, he's just kind of looking around, trying to find somebody, and the boy gets up from the bench, and we're all kind of watching, we're chanting, and he goes around to Radhikesh, which was like startled because he came from behind, and he just goes and gives him money. And he didn't even say anything. He didn't say a word. He didn't have time to say a word. He says, you're a Hare Krishna. I love you, Hare Krishna. I want to give you some money. And he goes, okay. He gives him a Bhagavad Gita. We were all laughing because it was just, you could just see the reciprocation that he wanted so bad to distribute books, and Krishna just immediately sent him someone to do a book. And then he sent him about two or three, four more people, and we ran out of books. So you can just see the reciprocation, the purity of your desires is so important. And that the more we do serve, the more wonderful that happiness will come out. The process of surrender is different for everyone, though. It looks different. I went into the kitchen the other day, and I noticed someone was cleaning the big hood. We have like 25-foot-long hood that gets all the, it has grease traps and all this stuff. It's a big, huge job. And I know someone is in there taking them all down. You have to use hot water and all this stuff. And nothing anybody wants to do. And so that's a type of service for someone, a physical service. And then there's another service of putting that $20 bill in the hundi box, right? Very difficult, you know. That $20 bill's at Best Buy, no problem. $20, you know. And there, it's a hard one to put in there, you know. And then there's accepting, responsibility in ISKCON. Huh, that's a big surrender. Or maybe you have to get two jobs to send your kid to Gurukula. Another big surrender for a family man. Or let's see, with some other ways. Or caring for devotees. How difficult that is. Surrendering your time. You get extra bonus points for that, Krishna says. Caring for the devotees. Be a lot of opportunities to do that as we get older. And then distributing books. I think you all experienced. It's a surrender to go out and distribute books. But in the ultimate goal, all these devotional services, they purify all the different parts of our being so that we can experience the pleasure of that soul, again, becoming illumined. So we need that purification. Otherwise, that surrender process doesn't happen. That fire doesn't get burning. Even just realizing that Krishna has given us so many things and we have that opportunity to give it back. Just recognizing, Krishna gave me this talent. Let me use it in your service. And just knowing that we have been thieves. We have been robbers. All these things that he's given us, we took for ourselves. And now we get to give it back. And it feels good to actually give it back to the original owner. And then as we give them back, then he gives us a clean bill of health. Okay, now you're getting ready. You can go back to the spiritual world. You can enter back with me in a loving service. So it's most important is that we should see this service as a privilege. Not that it's a drudgery, not that it's just a duty, but it's actually a privilege to become here in his home and to render service. And we should not miss any opportunity to do that. There's many, many opportunities to do that. But many people are afraid to approach God as a person. I was on campus that day, and I was desiring to to talk to someone. So the last person came up as a young girl, and she immediately sat down. She says, "Who am I? What am I supposed to be doing? What's karma? What's reincarnation?" And it was just like, oh, nice. How refreshing. I can just talk, you know. But every time I got to the word service or God, I could see like it was pinching. It was making it really hard for to hear the word that you actually serve God. This is, it all sends around this, and I could see that it was really hard because we all, actually many of us, were born in a very impersonal environment, voidist environment, not thinking that any, like the trees are persons, or someone that didn't look like me was a person. A very, very bad upbringing. So to think that God is a person, no way, you know. So I could see it was difficult. So for many of us, it is hard to actually render service to a person. But it's so wonderful that just a little bit of service or hearing about God just for a little bit of time, the heart warms up. And then you feel, yes. It's so nice to come here and to render a little service. You can see the baskets full of all kinds of things people have been bringing and all the work that goes into making such nice decorations. It's such a pleasant experience. And that's perfection. Knowing that we're doing the best thing for ourselves and for the Supreme Lord. So the materialist doesn't have that satisfaction and costs a lot of money for their enjoyment, and the supply is limited. And ultimately, they're sent back here, ditto, again, 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 doing the same thing, trying to find the same satisfaction with no results. So we have it really good. We just have to keep that faith very strong that Krishna will be pleased with our endeavors and that he will allow us to reach that perfection of becoming his confidential servant and receiving ultimately his embrace after this lifetime. So we should take it up. Don't miss the opportunity. Anybody like to have some reflections, as you would say? I'm sure we've all experienced that exchange by the more we surrender, it gets closer and closer and more nectarine all the time of just giving what we can. Yes? Namaraj?
Okay, thank you for a very nice talk, Mother. My question is, I know you've been a devotee for many years, and it seems like when you engage in devotional service, you get plenty of service. You get so much service. It seems
there's no shortage. If you need a list, I'll give you one.
Oh, it's you get plenty of service, and it's almost sometimes overwhelming. So now, how do you keep from becoming mechanical with it?
That's a good question. You can't forget that secret ingredient, but it does happen. You forget the ingredient of love and devotion. It becomes just an automatic thing. I find that even as intimate as dressing the deities, oh, yeah, I'll do this, put this here, this. We need people to remind you. I was doing the Braid of Radharani one time, and someone came by and said, "You know that you're touching the Supreme Lord's consort hair?" And I went, "Whoa, yeah." You know, so it helps to live in the service of devotees, you know, to remind us that this is such a unique experience because we do forget and we need each other. So that's the association of devotees, I think, is a secret to help us get off this, you know, regular platform. Yes. And hopefully Krishna will never send us away so that we don't have to experience not having it and then coming back.
What has been your favorite service?
Oh, God. Favorite service. I think talking to students on campus at universities because they don't know where they're going, they don't know what they want to do in life, and they're willing to listen and say Hare Krishna, and I don't know, it's just you lose time and space, you lose all your problems, all your miseries go away when you're just preaching on campus. It's really nice. I've done a lot of service, but that's really, it's very purifying because it's a challenge, but it's also very sweet, especially when you see them become devotees. Okay, so now we can have some nice sweet prasadam. Hare Krishna.